This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Just the way the goal transpired as well, that this goes loose. You're all hyped because you've just scored, and he starts to run. And you're like, oh, here we go. And this whole away end goes up, and I don't know what you call that 1 second before the player hits the shot.
Oh, the pause before the...
Oh, and just the way, the completely audacious, ridiculous way he just larrups it into the corner. It's the best moment I've had watching Ipswich in years, when that ball hit the net. But Dave, the realisation then of this is happening.
Hello and welcome back to part two of our 22-23 Ipswich Town season review. And joining me to discuss it, Craig Fimbo, Ben Bloom, Dave Diamond. I've got the choice cuts, the choice meaty chunks of the Bloom Monday podcast. We need to say thank you to Mikey, to Joe and to Seb. You can watch part one. We'll put a link up in both the podcast and the video descriptions to go and do that. But let's say hello to everyone. First off, the member of the pod team whose week has been... It's been a blur, hasn't it, Craig? How are you? What have you been up to?
Very good, Rich. Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, I've, amongst other things, I went to see Essex's Finest Blur at the Colchester Arts Centre on
Depeche Mode be
Friday evening.
Oh,
yeah, they're proper Essex. Like, they're like Basildon Essex, aren't they? Yeah. Rather than posh Essex. So don't ask me how I got tickets. I was just on the Ticketmaster website, clicking refresh, like 40,000 other people, and two tickets dropped into my basket, and away you went. And we were queuing up to get in, and there were people from Mexico. Guy behind us had come from Valencia. And yeah, it was sort of
a Brightling Sea.
There's it's a venue that, you know, I've been to dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of times, and seen kids' puppet shows, you know, recitals of the Christmas Carol, the Blockheads, Glenn Tilbrook, all the comedians you can think of, everything in between, and now to top it off, Blur. So yeah,
Craig, you've got to ask who had the prized other ticket.
Well, my wife, unsurprisingly, had the prized other ticket. I'd also got tickets to see James at the Albert Hall on Wednesday night, but I had to give up my ticket because my daughter's not very well. So I looked after her, babysat. My wife took a friend. So my wife friend.
Oh. Right time of it. Brilliant.
Any other 90s acts, Britpop acts that you're going to see next, Craig?
Cooler Shades playing at Ant Hill down the road from me. How about that?
I'm going to see Pulpit, what are they called? Finsbury Park in July.
Dodgy, so. A retouring three-piece suite. That's on my list. Presumably, we're all Blur versus Oasis. We're all on the Blur side because of geography. Is that fair? I'm looking around, shaking of heads. Dave looks very incredible.
It was close for me, but always Oasis, I think.
Think Oasis had the better hit songs, but Blur were the better band. I think you can make an argument for both.
Okay.
Well, let's continue to chat with Ben, not about music. We kind of think like this is the quiet time for the pod, but you are still on the motorways. You are still churning out the videos. It's exciting time for you. It's like Christmas, isn't it? Playoff season.
It is like Christmas. So I was roundly mocked on Thursday for deciding not... having bought a ticket to go to the greatest comeback in playoff history. But it's all right, because I did see Barnsley 1, Barnsley 1, Bolton 0. What else did I see?
Real
Coventry 0, Middlesbrough 0. Yeah, that was tight. And Luton 2, Sunderland, Neil. It's been a long week. I just want to question some recruitment here, Rich. David Diamond's job on this pod is to say crap. That's what people want him to do. And you've brought him on for the biggest winning streak. And it's, why is he here?
Well, let's ask him. Dave, why are you here? What's...
to be perfectly honest, I'm not really sure. I know exactly why I'm here. I was supposed to be on Thursday's show, and events took over themselves, so I couldn't be on Thursday's show. So here I am.
Well, we'll get you to talk about the bit between December and January then, Dave. We can throw the audience a bone. That's what they want. But yeah, well, let's pick it up. And I think what we're trying to do, obviously, we've got a back catalogue of podcasts throughout the whole season. So we're not going to go into minute detail here. But I think what we'll try and do is maybe trying to recall some of our thoughts, emotions at the time as things played out, because it's a very... emotionally, particularly the start of this second half, we've just beaten Oxford at Portman Road when Mikey, Seb and Joe left us, and we're starting this kind of turgid run really of draws and the January transfer window opening, guys. Portsmouth at Christmas time, not an exciting place to go for anyone, I'm sure, at Christmas time, but at that point Danny Cowley fighting for his job, and it's Connor Chapman to the rescue there. But as this window is opening, guys, we've got three draws in six prior to that Pompey result. Craig, are you, in terms of the January transfer window, we've obviously had a very bullish Mark Ashton talking about no stones left unturned, but are you expecting more business than perhaps might have been the case a few months prior when we were on that, just that solid run and looking unbeatable? Is maybe this run over Christmas, does it open up the coffers a little bit more than we might have needed to?
Yeah, it may well have done, because as you sort of allude to, we were ridiculously busy, and also, you know, not in terms of quality and quantity in the summer. So we'd got a half decent sized squad as it was, which, as you say, had been doing the business for the first third of the season, and there probably wasn't any requirement around October, November time. Probably thought, well, you know, maybe a couple of additions just to give us a little bit of spark and a bit of cover in January, just to see us to the end of the season. But yeah, that lull over the course of the turn of the year and tail end of last year, I think I was surprised with the number that we brought in, really, in the end. You know, it was certainly a statement of intent in terms of the quality, and when you compare it to the other teams that we were fighting against, you know, it blew them out of the water in terms of the business that we did as well.
Yeah, it did. I mean, should we deal with these guys now? Obviously, they signed throughout the first part of January, so there's a few games in between. But the first one up is Massimo Luongo, and the guys in the first part have been talking about we need that cover for the likes of Humphreys and Morsey in midfield. And Dave, it's no surprise really that Luongo signs, but hadn't really featured at Borough, and a free transfer. There's a few weeks of training. It's not an immediate 1st of January announcement. Were you getting a little bit question marks about
it? Yeah, I mean, that kind of came from left field. I mean, obviously, as Town fans, we all knew of Luongo and perhaps followed his, you know, had followed his career since that sort of brief spell under McCarthy, 10 seasons ago now. So, yeah, by that time, Evans had picked up his injury by that time. So it was certainly Humphreys playing alongside Morsey, also in that sort of run as well. So yeah, Luongo coming in, I think there were some eyebrows raised. He hadn't really played at all for Middlesbrough. It was an odd one. I mean, he was fairly consistent, I think, the seasons before for Sheffield Wednesday, but hadn't really figured for Middlesbrough at all. Obviously, question marks about his fitness, and even after he signed, he didn't really figure for the first month. I think, did he not make his debut, I think, at home? Did he come on against Burnley and whack someone? Didn't he really whack someone? And yeah, you thought, okay, this is what we want. This is kind of what we need. And he put in a really little cameo. I don't know, 15-20 minute cameo. And then I don't think again he really featured after that for a few weeks. But yeah, once he became established, you could see what he was. You could see what he was about.
And then. It's weird. It doesn't really happen in the modern game. That's that same kind of FA Cup run of games. George Hurst and then Nathan Broadhead. We'll talk to Craig about Broadhead in a second. But George Hurst is pictured in the stand before he's even signed. I mean,
that's right.
In terms of poorly kept secrets and all that kind of stuff. And two equals four for once. You know, someone we've been pursuing for a while, Dave, and great to get online. But again, someone who's not been featuring much.
No, they haven't been featuring much. And I remember, you know, on I think amongst ourselves on the pod, there was a general consensus that, oh, George Hurst, really? You know, we thought that ship had sailed at the start of the season, really, you know. And he hadn't really, you know, he hadn't really featured much for Blackburn. So again, that was not left field because obviously, yeah, McKenna was very, very keen on him. Hence the pursuit of him at the, you know, in the close season. So again, yeah, he comes in, and yet a strange one. He was there, wasn't he? I think watching that. I think it was the Burnley game with his girlfriend and the director's box, whatever it was, wasn't it? There's pictures of him there beforehand. So yeah, sort of fairly poorly kept secret that, but. Yeah, a sort of surprise, but perhaps no surprise given that, yeah, we were very, very strongly linked with him before.
Yeah, definitely needed that forward option as well. And another player that maybe a name that came out of left field, Craig, but is the first of these two signings, which to me at the time were statement signings because Nathan Broadhead comes in from Everton, good amount of pedigree. But it's like, well, Marcus Arnis is fine, isn't he? And we'll talk obviously over the course of the season of the contribution that Broadhead goes on to make. But what was your take at the time?
So you're saying that Marcus Arnis wasn't a dud, or he was a dud? I can't remember which one I twisted myself up my own arsehole about. Yeah, so he, as you rightly say, now he we'd managed to persuade Everton, you know, by waving some pound notes in front of their face to recall him from a championship loan to sell to us in League One. And he'd been doing well. Well, he's certainly been playing a lot of games for Wigan. He'd played over 20 league games in the first half of the season, you know, so he hadn't been missing many, which was one of the slight concerns you may have had with him at Sunderland, because as I've mentioned before, I know a Sunderland fan very well, the former mayor of Brighton. So he'd been replaced in the last week or so, but he's a big Sunderland.
And I get crap for name dropping. Jesus Christ.
I'm not entirely sure that's quite on the same level, to be perfectly honest.
Local politics.
The guy who got funding for the Brighton's Lido. Yeah, so he goes and sees Sunderland a lot. You know, he's up and down the A1 to see family and stuff. And he said, he's a player. You know, this guy's a very, very good player. If you can keep him fit, you know, he'll play one, he'll miss two, he'll play two, he'll miss three, sort of thing. I think he may have played 20 games for Sunderland in League One over the course of the whole season when he was with them and helped them get promoted. But what he said was, this guy is mustard, you know, in and around the box, he makes runs, he's good in the air, he's spectacular with his feet, he finds space, good dribbler, good finisher, just got to keep him fit. Yeah. And I thought, wow, you know, and you know, not having, he's a name you sort of recognise, you've seen in passing, but you know, maybe not something you've really taken too much notice of. But yeah, you say he was full of praise. You know, should we be able to get over the line and say we obviously splashed the cash to get him in from Everton. Once he'd got up to speed, the rest is history.
And possibly needed some convincing to drop down as well. Possibly a player that didn't need a huge amount of convincing in respect of the destination, but maybe the level, Ben, was.
I think it's important to say that Wigan were terrible as well. He was losing every week, and they were going through. So I don't know if Kola Touré had gone then, but you know, much nicer place I think to be here. True. Rather than up the division there. I think you'd agree.
True, but
and you may get paid at Ipswich as well, which is probably a benefit.
Yeah, indeed. But Harry Clark, Ben, the guys in the first half were talking about Dadasing being consistent, ever present. I give credit to Alex Hare in the Telegram group and a regular contributor on in the live chats. He was talking about a right back for quite a while, but I don't think any of us expected us to be splashing the cash and recruiting someone with Championship and Premier League, admittedly, as a youth player, but nevertheless, quite a statement signing this one too.
Yeah, so I do this thing for a website and it's like Championship column every week and I have to do like a loanee of the week. And I'd done Harry Clark about a month before after he'd scored for Stoke, but he was playing sort of right wing back for Stoke. So honestly, and Rich, you sort of texted me before and said, right, talk about Harry Clark, don't be wise after the event. And it's going to be really hard for us to not be wise after the event with a lot of these. So I'm kind of like, okay, a right back? Is that what we need? And we've kind of joked about the financial muscle, and it's like there were a couple of £1 million signings in League One last season, and they were both fullbacks going into Ipswich. But I think it kind of parlays in what Dave was saying about George Hurst, that and we don't want to get into the breaking arms, slapping ourselves on the back, but they've been so focused, haven't they, on no, this, you may not think we need this player now, but we need this player now. And you know, we've specifically chosen this guy because we know more about football than you do, and you're going to see once they come in why we've put them in. And I think what Clark did, A, was balancing out Leif Davis on the other side. And we kind of struggled a bit on the pod with the team shape, kind of very gradually going from a back three to a back four. And we spoke about the Danassi and Burns partnership as a third centre-back and a right wing-back. And I think what the Clark signing did was, apart from, as Craig has mentioned, being a massive, you know, okay, we really mean business if we're signing two fullbacks for £1 million here. It kind of finished the transition to properly to, right, no, this is a real back four now. We're not going to play the ball around with three centre-backs. We're pushing on and maybe really started to facilitate this more hybrid physical part of the game. Because, I mean, Dave mentioned it a few times. Look at the guy, you know. If you want to add physicality, pace, presence to your team, just an absolute specimen of a bloke. So I think it stood for a lot of things that I didn't notice at the time. I didn't get it. I'm not Kieran McKenna level of brains when it comes to football. But with hindsight now, it was a really transformative. So obviously Broadhead is the one. He's the special sauce, isn't he? Yeah. But this ticked a lot of other type of boxes in terms of what they were trying to achieve that I frankly couldn't see that at the time.
Yeah, and let's deal with this sticky patch during January, because there's a lot of emotion. We talk about it on the podcast, a lot of emotion within our team and obviously out on social media and what have you. But there is, it's a weird kind of clashing of situations here, because the FA Cup run, Craig, we'll come to you very quickly, Craig, on the FA Cup, because 91-92, you're a big advocate for that season and the success there. But I wonder how much of the FA Cup run at the time was felt as a distraction, but actually ended up building confidence for the job to do at the end of the season. Your thoughts on that dimension?
Yeah, well, I think what the 91-92 run did is just it gave us a bit of confidence that we could, you know, play at a higher level. And we were all, and that's sort of when we, around about Christmas time, is when we started our run to the end of the season that year, or that season, sorry. And I think it was, but I'm not entirely sure this one's completely comparable, because we were playing almost, if not entirely, a different team in the cup games to the ones that were struggling in between the cup games, weren't we? But what it did do, I think, maybe for, in terms of confidence throughout the squad as a whole, was this way that we play can work and will work if, you know, we stick at it, sort of thing. It may have given them a bit of belief that it may not be clicking in the league at the moment, but it can click against a team which is running away, as Ben can, you know, give note to in terms of the, yeah, that's it, absolutely. And they more than held their own in both games. I say, albeit with, you know, almost completely different personnel slotting into those similar positions there.
Yeah, definitely gave opportunities for Luongo and Hurst, didn't it, to get match fitness that they might have not got in the league. But Dave, this, yeah, I'll let you, if you want to warm up the C machine, not that one, the other one, this is the time to do it, because there's this last minute draw at Lincoln, Humphreys to the rescue, and probably on the balance of the game, a fair result, albeit stats probably suggest we were a bit unlucky. Then this draw with Plymouth doing what Plymouth do, and then the low point, and Craig was there, I'm sure, for this, the foggy game at Oxford. There's a kind of a rally against Morecambe, which you kind of expect at this point. They are really struggling. And then there's a three-game run of draws, Cambridge away, kind of felt like this. In business world, you talk about teams coming together, there's forming, storming, and then norming and performing. And this Cambridge draw feels like the one where there's the most dysfunction about us, but Then there's this.
Yeah, I was at that game. The Cambridge game was a weird game because yeah. I think Craig was there as well. We just played in front of them, really. First half was really, really odd first half, wasn't it? We were really passive, weren't we, Craig? You remember
very
that?
Deep.
Yeah, God. And I think he made changes. We were 1-0 down and then kind of a little sliding door. Walton makes a great save, good penalty save. Come on to another one. And then he made changes, brought Edwards on, I think, at half time. And that certainly livened things up. And probably a bit unlucky not to win the game. I think Broadhead missed a good chance. The Dubbo scored a good goal. But we all, again, we came away from that thinking, it's not quite right, is it? It wasn't, you know. Yes, we rallied in the second half and probably should have won. But that obviously then brought us on to the, I think the very next week was the Sheffield Wednesday game.
Correct, yeah. Yeah,
which, well, the Cambridge one, sorry, Rich. I think, Dave, the Cambridge one is the last league start for Lee Evans. Am I right about that?
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe a key sliding door as well.
And it was also when we had Keogh and Edmondson as our centre backs that match.
Good point.
We?
We did. We did.
For some reason.
A bit of rotation there, a bit of jiggery pokery. And then, again, Dave, we talk about the sliding doors moment, Sheffield Wednesday at home. You know, this 2-0 down, Michael Smith misses this chance. And then the man, the myth, the legend, Nathan Broadhead announces doesn't he?
We were nowhere. I mean, you know, the crowd were getting edgy. We were 2-0 down. Smith scored a brilliant goal. And it's one of the, probably, aside from the two at home park, the Plymouth goals, that was probably the best goal. Well, certainly the best goal scored against us. There wasn't many this season, was there? But probably the best goal scored against us at Portman Road. Brilliant goal. And Smith goes through, doesn't he? Fluffs that one, goes wide, and then, you're right, the biggest sliding door moment of the season just on half time was the ridiculous Broadhead free kick. He wasn't even supposed to take it, I don't think, but suddenly he steps up and we think, oh, okay, Broadhead, all right, have a go. Plants it in the top corner, and that was the lift off, really, wasn't it?
Dave, can I just give you the context of the opponent as well? Wednesday won 11 out of 12.
They weren't conceding either, were
and
they?
And that was the draw. That was the one game out of the 12.
Yeah,
and win.
Yeah, they weren't
and
conceding.
Previously beat Plymouth as well, didn't they, Ben, as well?
Just that would have been
before.
Close.
Yeah, 1-0.
Yeah, totally right. Is that the game before? Yeah. They were on fire. And as I've been dragged over the coals for a million times saying, guaranteed to go up, everyone else is playing for second, right?
Yeah.
Quite right at that stage. And obviously rallied, got the goal deflected, free kick from Davis second half. And it could have gone perhaps either way that game. I think we're generally in the ascendancy possession wise, but yeah, that was an important point, they say. And that was really the catalyst, wasn't it?
Because it was a scrappy old game before we'd scored, and we sort of huffed and puffed a little bit.
Mr. Penny.
Well, Chaplin missed the penalty, of course, yeah.
Yes. Even Sheffield Wednesday fans refer to that Smith one-on-one chance. You know, if you happen to go onto their forums, they also in the last
you're on there 72
hours, but maybe previously to that, possibly you might have gone on
talk.
There. But yeah, they were also referencing themselves, you know, between that and the Broadhead, it just thankfully sparked us into the second half and onwards, didn't it?
But incredible. So before the streak, and this is what I'm a big fan of the film Moneyball, so we're going to refer to what happens from Forest Green onwards as the streak. But there's this point at Bristol Rovers. You're there, aren't you, though? Valentine's Day, Craig, you know how to have a good time on Valentine's Day. Is this
No wonder he's missed this one to James and Blur this week.
Say, he's throwing back the brownie points. is this Joey Barton doing what Joey Barton does, or is this Ipswich team just getting to the point where it's going to be functional and it's just one game maybe too soon for it?
Can I just give Craig the numbers quickly? Because Rich is totally right, Craig. Bristol Rovers, and this is so fortuitous, these sliding doors, lost their five previous games.
Yeah.
And I think he just decided, right, I want a clean sheet and a draw here.
Yeah. Although, to be fair to them, they probably had the better chances in the game. You know,
it was the comedy off the line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the Luke Wolfenden loving with the post, wasn't it? He was rubbing himself up and down the post after it had saved us. But again, I think that match, we'd made four changes. So you're at the point whereby you're thinking, have we yet worked out, is everyone quite fit enough yet to be playing all the games? Have we quite worked out what our system is? I think Clark had been dropped, but Danasian had taken his place. Aluko started, possibly his last start, I'm thinking maybe. because Broadhead was on the bench and Clark were on the bench and they came on in the second half. But it was, again, it was just a bit of a drab
game.
When we're at our worst, that's how we played. That the Lincoln game was very passive. This game Cambridge, was very, very certainly. Passive, very slow. I think it, as you said, Rich, I think it probably was a case of just trying to get the formula right and getting everyone up to speed. I say Broadhead didn't start because they were still nursing him up to full speed in terms of the fitness, which, you know, proved invaluable for the last.
I remember doing a post-match pod after that one.
I was on that show. That was horrible.
And it was all a bit down. And everyone was saying, well, hang on. I say what? You know, if we don't buck our ideas up, we might not even make the playoffs again. You know, we've seen in previous seasons how it had gone. And, it was all a bit downbeat after that game.
Dave, Rich, Plymouth and Wednesday are still well over 2 points per game, aren't they?
Yeah. That was the analogy you used that day, Ben. We'd dipped. I think by that time, we'd probably dipped below 2 points, hadn't we, I think?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point...
Not far, but I think we had.
The Lincoln game is the point at which we moved out to third. We'd obviously been in for the first half of the season, we'd been in the first or second position for the majority of it. But yeah, Lincoln is when we dropped to third. That Bristol Rovers game, we actually temporarily dropped down to fourth because Bolton had played a game more than us.
That's right.
So this is the kind of low point of this point. We're talking midway through February. And, you know, at the time, a lot of folk, similar narrative that you mentioned there, Dave, about is the playoffs going to happen? But
Rich, I was so cheesed off. I was like, are we really going to mess with all this money? We've got this manager. Come on, we can't be wise after the event. I was like, we are going to mess this up. And the way things are going, you're not going to win a playoff in this
form. I'm not saying on our pod, but, you know, on TWT forums and stuff like that, then there was questions about the manager.
There was. But I'm going to pat myself on the back because I rarely do this.
I
went on Radio Suffolk after the Cambridge.
He's always
game.
Doing it, listeners.
I always pat my own back. That's bullshit. I don't do that. But to me, I picked up the sense that you've got these four signings, they need to gel. But if you're going to have a dip, if you're going to have a blip, do it now. Don't do it in March and April for Wednesday. And so I was kind of, I had that hope that it would turn around. But maybe because I like being a contrarian a little bit as well. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Ben. Like, there's the four signings that come in. There's the tricky run of games. But now the streak starts with these more accommodating fixtures on paper, a lot of home games as well. So at that point, a Forest Green 4-0 win, pretty comfortable. Forest Green don't really know how to play that one and just get turned over. But Broadhead scores again. That one had braced for Chaplin, one of these situations where Chaplin gets... is bracing is substituted. But were you thinking that, I guess all of us were thinking, you've got to win all these games now, haven't you?
Well, you were saying it. We said a few things. I mean, we say a lot of stuff that comes back to bite us on the arse. But I always remember, maybe it was on that pod with David, where it was like, it needs to be some kind of absurd run. I think I would have said something like 8 wins in 11 is what we need, not 13 wins out of 14 or whatever it was that transpired. What we all did, Rich, we all looked at this run of games, which was Forest Green, MK, Burton, Accrington. Obviously, three of those have proven to have been relegated in the end. And it was a little bit of a case of, well, minimum then, you've got to win all of those games. And, you know, and then it gets really hard. And come on, we'd all sat there. And I think it was March the 11th was like Plymouth's last game against anyone in the top 10. And we're all like... if we're trailing them, we're not going to catch them looking at the fixtures now. But what we've said on the pod as a theme for a long time is that good work, there's a lag, isn't there? You put the good work in on the training ground or in the recruitment, it doesn't immediately go bang, does it? There's often a lag. And Craig makes a really good point about, you know, I don't want to get into being smug or wise after the event, about nursing Broadhead in, that could have been vital, you know, because could have just thrown him in, you know. Presumably they see him being a complete baller in training as well. And to be patient with him was very smart. But I do feel there's a bit of a things coming together that are probably processes that have been going on for a long, long time. Hmm. What we don't know and what I would love to know, and Kieran McKenna will probably never tell anybody, is this idea of this change of style that we all think happened. And I'm going to do it, guys. I'm going to do a name drop. Here it comes. I asked Liam Richardson, I said, explain the hybrid style. And he said, I used to say to my Wigan team, you've got to be able to play, you've got to be able to run, and you've got to be able to fight. That's how you win League One. You don't have to do them all in the same game, but across the season, you might have to. You know, like if you play Barnsley, for example, we probably did all three in the same game, as we'll gloriously get onto. I can't wait to talk about that. But he obviously was the reigning League One champion. And I think at some point, and I don't know what you guys think, we added the fight and we added the running to the playing. And I don't know when, and I don't know if Kieran McKenna will ever tell you whether there's a conscious change or when he implemented it. But it feels like right about now.
Yeah, it does. And Dave, you mentioned the consternation, the doubts that were creeping in prior to this run about McKenna. But we have to give him massive credit for, you know, the signings are a factor in the run. Obviously, Broadhead, none of us could have foreseen the massive contribution he'd make. But Clark coming in kind of feels like a direct strategy recruitment. You know, talk to us about McKenna and maybe what he'd learned from that really tricky run, that crap run, because
I think you're right, and I think Ben's spot on, and Craig also, you know, with the lag, you know, these things, you put the time in, as Bobby Robson used to say, time on the grass. You put in the time on the grass, and that, you know, and that just eventually does come to fruition, but it takes time. You know, around about that time, I think even perhaps more so than these guys obviously covered it perhaps early on, but you know, even probably more so than Broadhead, the running and the fight, just having Luongo in there, and you know, adding Luongo to the midfield alongside Morsey was just made such a difference. Humphreys was doing brilliantly. Look, Humphreys is going to be a great player, isn't he? And I think we mentioned on the pod before, had that run of games with Morsey sitting on 9 yellow cards gone on another two or three games, he would have picked up a yellow card and he'd be missing three games, and that could have been our season. He was so fundamentally important to our season. That could possibly have been it. But just going back to that run of four games, I think that run of four games starting, I think, with Forest Green, yep, and Accrington, etc., that then ran in, I think, to the Bolton away game. So we said, right, got to win these four games, because look what we've got coming out immediately out of these four games. So you win these four games, you've got, yeah, okay, people would have expected us to really to win, but you've still got to do the business, and you're going into the Bolton game, and that win at Bolton was the statement win, I think. It really
was. Yeah, it was. Well, the first of a few statement wins, isn't it? And
well, yeah.
But we need to give credit to Sam Morsey. Didn't end up getting any of the trophies for player of the season, but you know, that goal at MK, but just, you talked about it, Dave, is 8 out of 10-ness every week.
Every single week. What a level. Incredible. Absolutely.
Rich, sorry, can I just come in on the lag and the good practice? Mm. I agree totally what Dave said. We've moaned for years about fine margins, even this season. What good work does as well is it all of a sudden, we've said a lot of things already where I've gone, oh God, that went for us, didn't it? That went for us. All of a sudden, these things that are 50-50 could go either way, you know. Okay. I do think there's a lot of happenstance with Luongo. I think in another universe, he's not even here, or he doesn't kick a ball. And he ends up being the perfect guy at the perfect time, as much as we'd all love to say it was perfectly planned. And you're talking about penalty saves. You're talking about players arriving in FA Cup games and that being perfect. You're talking about the context of what the other team have just done when we go to play them. And it feels like we put ourselves in a position with this good work that all the fine margins, and it's, you can sit there being a football fan moaning, thinking it's bad luck, but it's often just good practice. And I think we put ourselves in a position where all of a sudden, for 71 days or whatever it is, every fine margin went in our way, and I bloody love it.
Far be it from me to use a golfing analogy here, but the harder we worked, the luckier we got, didn't we? As the phrase,
Gary Player.
Yeah,
there you go.
Hello.
You
having
that?
Hello.
What?
Hey, Dave.
I listened to a Happy podcast, birthday. Richard, about Tiger Woods the other day as well. So there I'm getting go. Well into my
Gary Player. Gary Player's the ultimate. Yeah. It's like, how old's Gary Player? Like 82, 83, and still does something like 1,000 sit-ups
every day, doesn't he?
Planks every single day.
Embarrassing all of us. But Craig, let's take Ben's thoughts then into the Bolton game. Because we've now called it a statement game at least twice, and I'm saying it again. But again, Ben's fine margins, really critical here. This penalty save from Walton, you know, it's a big factor in this win, but great goal from Hurst, isn't it? Talk to us about it.
Yeah, and sort of the goal from Hurst probably references back. We were talking about going maybe a little bit more direct, having a bit more fight. And that's what he brought us, you know, for all Freddie Ladapo's positives, and he's scored over 20 goals this season. You know, he's done fantastically. But what Hurst allowed us to do, as we'll reference in the Barnsley game, it allowed us to add a bit more fight on the centre halves, didn't it? You know, we were all of a sudden even adding an even stronger dimension up front in terms of the battle that we could take on, you know, two or three defenders all by ourselves with one person. And it probably, again, talking about a lag, it probably took him time to get used to us. It took us time to get used to playing with him, to his strengths. And I think certainly the first goal here illustrated that in terms of the pace and directness, you know, of us on the break and him being in the box to be able to glance that in first time into the far corner.
Barry, yeah, Davis, that was Barry. That deserved a Barry Davis commentary, that one, didn't it?
Yeah,
it
really
he would have. The decibel reader would have gone.
There you go.
Barry would have been doing that one, wouldn't he?
Craig, may have gone even higher in the next away game, but
we'll come to that in a second. I mean, are you? We've kind of talked about the. You've got to beat the Thurris Greens, the MK Donses. In terms of the psychology of the team, and probably what McKenna and your mate Kevin Minter is probably yellow shoes, as we call him here, out of love and affection, that this is such a big win in terms of the narrative of the teams that you have to go to in April, the likes of Derby, the likes of Peterborough, the likes of Barnsley with the helpful postponement, which we'll talk about in a bit. How big is it for a team like Ipswich, which has struggled against top six teams in its previous League One campaigns, to kind of get this? Because we've drawn with Plymouth, we've drawn with Sheffield Wednesday, those ships had sailed. Big moment this in respect of the top six narrative, isn't it?
Yeah, and also with the relative comfort that we performed as well. You know, it was just almost the perfect away performance, wasn't it? Score early, hold a team at bay, score late, 2-0, thanks very much. Yeah, it's a safe penalty. Yeah, absolutely. But then, as Ben was alluding to, when we had our little stutter, all of a sudden we were looking below us. We were looking at Derby. We were looking at Bolton in terms of us being overtaken.
Exactly.
And this, on the back of the wins that we'd got, this then also allowed us just to keep those at arm's length, because, you know, we still couldn't foresee Sheffield Wednesday dipping as much as they were. You know, we just had to keep doing our job and literally just hope for the best.
Yeah. And I think at the time we were saying, well, it does our playoff chances no harm at all to be able to beat the likes
of... Yeah, we'll be at home in the first leg.
Yeah. George Hurst repeats his goal-scoring exploits in a pretty comfortable 2-0 win over Shrewsbury. And then Derby away, Ben, you know, a manager we've had lots of run-ins with. Admittedly, we beat Paul Warne's Derby in November time, but he'd just come in. It was quite a new team, a few injuries, etc. Is this a statement win as well at Derby?
Most definitely, yeah. And we've had these conversations. What would a good side do now? A good side would show up there, keep a clean sheet and, you know, win 2-0. And we did it twice. And I'm just trying to add the context of where those sides were. So Bolton had a massive clean sheet streak when we went there. They were gearing up for the Pizza Cup final. A game with that everything goes right. They were knackered as well, weren't they? They played like 11 times. And then after they played us, they didn't play once in 3 weeks or something. So there's a feeling there as well. We've got them at exactly the right time. And I've just had a feeling with Paul Warne at Derby that he's looking at next season. And he was almost, you know, it's not my squad. There's a few older players here. I'm going to drag them as close as I can. And again, if you look at their results, the timing was lovely to go there and play them. But it's just this consistent thing. And, you know, you can sit, and I'm sure there'll be people getting annoyed with what me say. Oh, I'm making apologies for the other team. I'm not, because everywhere we turned up at this point, we were ready to go. And, you know, there was just absolutely no let up. And just, are we in the clean sheet streak as well now?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. And this game sets the record sets that record actually. And then I think we then beat Wickham, keep a clean sheet as well. And then it ends at Cheltenham. But that's where the record is set, and then it's continued. But Yeah, I wonder on Derby and Paul and whether it's a good fit and whether this, as you say, this summer would expect maybe some Demolition Man-esque churn now they're not under the embargo. Do you feel like that's coming, Ben?
Oh, I think they'll get promoted next season, yeah. Probably finishing the top two, won't they? You'd imagine, well, we would say this having got up, it's not going to be three teams scoring 90-plus points next season, is there?
We'll set the target.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Haven't we? Dave, we can't talk about Derby without, I know you, on the podcast, and obviously all of our back catalogue, go and listen to that, folks. But this Chaplin goal, do you want to talk to us about this again?
It is. I watched that the other day again, actually, and it is, in all my years of supporting Ipswich, that is probably the best goal of its kind I've seen.
And doesn't it, Dave, doesn't it exemplify the new thing we were all asking for?
The goal's
direct, pace, you know.
And the key players are all making a contribution. One with his penalty saves.
Unbelievable. When you look back at that goal, it seems quite simple, but it's just an unbelievably well-executed goal, isn't it? I mean, broader. Yep. I mean, from the catch from Walton, the run. Well, you look back at that goal, as soon as Walton catches the ball, Burns and Broadhead, they're gone, aren't they? Absolutely gone. He releases it and from then on, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? Just from the ridiculous, 50-yard crossfield ball to the presence of Burns to just cushion the header down.
Cushioned, isn't it? Perfect.
Yeah, you just know Chaplin, one touch. One touch out of his feet. But it's a goal. I've heard the goal described by the Derby, I guess I follow commentary, the local Derby commentary on the day, and they're just... What the hell just happened there? You know, unbelievable. As is the second goal as well. I mean, the finish again by Hurst is just crazy, isn't it? How it, you know, perhaps Burns should perhaps bury the first chance, but just drops. He doesn't panic. He just swivels on it and buries it in the top corner first time. Again,
Rich,
another statement.
Mate. Can I just update your timeline? Because while this is going on, we had a 2-week gap, and vitally, 26th of March, Forest Green 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0. You cannot underestimate what that did. That is the shock EFL result of the season.
Well, the Barnsley win, though, is just prior to that, isn't it?
Yeah, do you know what? I don't think the Barnsley, and we, you know, if we touch on the playoff final, which is now going to be Barnsley Sheffield Wednesday, I just feel that the Forest Green 1, Rich, was the result. And then they go and play the game in hand that they had cancelled against Cheltenham and draw that one as well. And, you know, winning at Cheltenham's not for everyone.
When is the cancelled Barnsley game? It's about then, isn't it?
That's why we have the free week before Derby, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
And then
it's in between Shrewsbury and Derby.
And again, then leaning on from that, so yeah, in between Shrewsbury and Derby. So don't forget then, Broadhead just comes back from that, and he's 10 foot tall, isn't he? Scores the equaliser in Croatia, yeah. And he's just come back, and he is just...
And Morsey's dodged his suspension as well.
Morsey's dodged his suspension. Broadhead's come back from that, just full of absolute confidence, which, let's face it, he just carried it through to the rest of the season, didn't he?
The context, Dave, with Sheffield Wednesday then, when we come off the pitch against Derby, we're not talking about Wednesday 23 unbeaten. We're talking about they haven't won in five. They've scored 3 points in five games. And in a season where you're going to finish with 96 and not go up, you can literally circle that and go there.
Yeah.
Craig, talk to me about Easter. Wickham are... very comfortably dispatched 4-0 at home.
Yeah.
And we're starting to get this pattern of usual goal scorers. Hurst scores, Chapman scores, Burns scores. Ladapo is making contributions even if he doesn't start as well. You know, that was potentially a banana skin game. And then we had the legit banana skin game, the kind of fixtures that we don't want to have ever again, that kind of a hallmark of the League One experience away at Cheltenham. But we've got this drawing run from Sheffield Wednesday that Ben has talked about, and suddenly the Derby game we're third, Wickham we're second, Cheltenham back down to third again. So talk to us about the mini roller coaster over Easter and your thoughts about that. Were you at Cheltenham?
No. Okay. I came back from New York that day, didn't I? Started growing my promotion beard.
Oh, yes, your promotion. But that Wickham game was the first...
Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, we'd been utterly dominant at Portman Road, haven't we? And Wickham were chasing a playoff position at that point. That probably ends their run. But we're starting just to dispatch teams mercilessly at Portman Road, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And we're sort of taking it as red, aren't we? If you go back to the Forest Green, Burton, Accrington, Shrewsbury, Wickham, Charlton, there, 4-0, 4-0, 3-0, 2-0, 4-0, 6-0. You know, we are, as you say, dispatching teams at home, and it's the same players that are scoring the goals. As you say, Freddie Ladapo's really coming into his own in terms of that role of coming on from the bench and making an impact, which he'd struggled with previous to that. You know, he was coming on not really affecting games too much. You just wonder, looking back at the Cheltenham game, that was a only game that Broadhead didn't start, didn't he? I think he'd taken a bit of a kick.
Harness comes in, yeah.
Yeah, he'd taken a bit of a kick, hadn't he, the previous game. So, you know, missed out on that one from a starting perspective. But maybe that little just kick up the backside to say, look, guys, this isn't over yet. You know, if teams like Cheltenham can, no disrespect to teams like Cheltenham, but if teams like Cheltenham can force a draw against you, you need to be on it every single game. You know, there is no respite out of this. Nothing is going to be easy from here on in. Even from Walton's perspective, you know, we've been through that clean sheet run. He makes a bit of an error against Cheltenham. Again, reset to go again. And as it transpired, that was really the last hiccup of our season.
And then Charlton, you mentioned it there, Craig. I mean, utterly, utterly dominant this 6-0 victory, and this is what returns us to second, this victory, because it's three draws in a row for Wednesday. You know, we joke that, or we feared that dropping points to the likes of Cheltenham, Lincoln, Oxford would screw over our season. Well, that's the teams that Sheffield Wednesday drew with at this time. So,
great,
you know,
point.
It's League One for you guys, isn't it? But this 6-0 game, just Charlton been on a good run as well, haven't they? I think they were in the top six of top form teams in the league at that
point. They were a nice opponent, weren't they, Rich, for that point in the season, the way they were going to play.
Macaulay Bond makes an appearance, doesn't he, as well? But what finally a hat-trick for Chapman, isn't it, I think? I'm looking at my
transfer. Yeah, taps one in, doesn't he? Yeah.
Finally they told me he was going to be top scorer about 2 months out, and I laughed at him.
Interesting two-game aggregate against Charlton. I think it was 10-4, wasn't it?
That's tremendous.
10-4, good buddy.
But that exercised a few demons as well, didn't it, Dave? Because we could have talked about in the first part, that 4-4 definitely unsettled
psychologically had an impact, yeah.
Again, from a psychological perspective, it's like, right, revenge, and boy, did we do it in style, you know? Sunny day.
Absolutely. Ran all over him, didn't we? Yeah.
And I'm going to put this out there, Ben, and I love your video from...
Will
Magnus stand for this one? Port Vale. Oof. Is this, of all of the win at Charlton, Peterborough, Barnsley, Exeter. Is this win at Port Vale the most mentally significant?
Definitely, because we weren't very good, were we? Or rather, Port Vale played a really good defensive,
well organised
game. Because if you remember, Darryl Clark was a big favourite there, and they'd sacked him like the morning before.
Monday morning. Yeah,
Andy Crosby's got that job now, which is a bit of a surprise. And the players really looked at it, and you're seeing this low block defence.
There it is.
And
there it is.
They snatch that goal, and you think, "Oh man, oh here we go." And yeah, just to come through it, and I know I'm like biggest Broadhead fanboy as well, but his coolness to take the penalty. I will also say that is the night I think most of us conceded the title to Plymouth because they won in the 96th. Been sitting there so happy, and my phone, a certain gambling app pops up to tell me. And I'm like, what time is that night? Really? But yeah, I totally agree, Rich. You don't, I think it's Paul Merson said, like when he won two titles or whatever with Arsenal, and he said, you play well 5 or 10 times during the season, everything clicks, you thrash teams. Winning titles is just muscle memory, grind it out. And that was it. And if I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan, let's be fair, or a Plymouth fan watching that, Plymouth fan less so, obviously. But if I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan watching that, you're thinking they're not letting up here, and I'm here for it.
And we talked about these kind of games in the context of previous seasons as well. You know, the Crystal Palace win, Seb mentioned that with Jono and his kind of upward celebration there, psychologically massive. But Dave, would you have taken a point at Peterborough if I'd offered it you?
Yeah, I think so. We're all looking at those run of games on here, weren't we? And we said, well, I think, Ben was talking about a run earlier on. So perhaps if we can, I don't know, win 8, drew 3 and lose 1 or something like that, wouldn't have been anywhere near. Wouldn't have been close. We would have been surpassed by Sheffield Wednesday, even under with their run of form, by 3 or 4 points, I think, probably. So, Port Vale result and the manner of it really, really was such an important win, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Peterborough had chances in this game, didn't they, Craig?
Into the Peterborough game. Yeah, they certainly did. I mean, it's just again the timing of the goals, reasonably early goal from Burns, and then. Yeah, just again the manner, just the manner of the performance after that. I think Walton, we defended pretty well, didn't we? Walton made some decent.
Dave, the intangibles, the confidence, and the swagger now is just.
Swagger's a good swagger. I mean, I think the second goal sums it up, doesn't it? Just the quality of the ball and the finish from Chaplin, and just the Ladapo goal was the icing on the cake. Again, all right, you only got 3 or 4 more games to go in the Barnsley game coming up, but again. What a statement win. Sheffield Wednesday would be, okay, perhaps forget Plymouth. Well, no, not at that stage, but Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth would be looking at that game thinking, okay, right, this is where they drop points. This is our moment. But again, and Sheffield Wednesday fans at that point must be, I know they were.
You're now still thinking, tonight.
Yeah, what have we got to do?
Craig, because after that run, just go on Owl's Talk.
We shared the same login.
After that Sheffield Wednesday blip,
Ipswich Lurker,
maybe late February into March, maybe into early April, they were on another winning, 4 or 5 game run at that stage.
Yeah, Wednesday win the last ball, don't they? So, Craig, I want to get a sense of there's a few things that need to come together to put a run together like we have, and to do it at big places like Peterborough and like Barnsley, which is where we're going to next. Off the field, the fan base is now fully united as well. There's some noisy away ends at Derby, Peterborough as well. But when the town and the fan base and the kind of local area is suddenly buoyant as well, it really bigs up the momentum, doesn't it? We definitely feed off this, don't we?
Yeah, it does. And Ben's used the exact right term there in terms of swagger. The front three, the Broadhead, Chaplin, Hurst triumvirate was just, they were purring at this time, weren't they? They were all playing with confidence. They were playing knowing you know, without sounding too pompous, that they were better than the players that they were playing against. You know, they were just oozing confidence and style and trying things that were coming off as well. You know, those through balls that Broadhead was playing, whether it be on the floor or scooping through to Chaplin, were just coming off. The understanding, it was all just clicking. You know, it was real silky football. But going on to Barnsley, we had to show the other side of things once we got up there and battled it out against them.
Rich, no one got injured as well.
Yep.
We moan about massive injuries. Yeah. It's all very well saying this is the team. No one got injured.
Yeah.
Big credit to the off-field team there as well.
Fantastic.
If I'd offered you a point at Barnsley, Craig, beforehand, would you have taken it? At this point in time, at least.
And the thing is, as sort of Dave was saying about Sheffield Wednesday looking at our Peterborough match and thinking, well, they're going to drop points there. They could look at that gap of 4 days, couldn't they? Peterborough and Barnsley on the Saturday, Tuesday, and you know, arguably Thursday. Well, they may pick up 2 points if they're lucky in those matches. But again, you're saying about the crowd. You know, you've taken how many thousand people it was up the A1 on a Tuesday night to have a sing and a dance in Yorkshire. Yeah, amazing. Absolutely. And we spoke about the postponement, which you know, we are fully assured that was all above board and no reason to think not. You know, it was all done in good faith, but it did work out in our favour, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
They had the momentum at the time of the original, and we had the momentum at the time of the
rematch. And you spoke about injuries there even more so. I think the key, what, Luke O'Connell was not fit for that game, was he? That sort of fairly key midfielder, as we've subsequently seen.
Well, Rich, you talked about the points expectation. The second we went, say, 3-0 up against Peterborough, everything changed, because all of a sudden we were talking, can you get 3 or 4 points across the two? And then we knew that Sheffield Wednesday weren't playing on the Tuesday. Plymouth were. So it all of a sudden became about, well, if you don't lose, kind of all right, because Sheffield Wednesday aren't making up any ground. And it was all about, okay, maybe, where were Plymouth? Accrington or something?
Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury, wasn't it?
No, yeah. Shrewsbury was the Port Vale night. I think they were at Accrington when we were playing.
Yes, they were.
Barnsley, yeah. And it was almost like, I'm going to slip up there and we maybe move past them. But and Seb was trying not to use the term free hit, but you could almost see why it was being bandied about before that Barnsley game, can't you?
We did debate every permutation of those, of what's a good result and what's a bad result of that.
What happened last, our goal difference was just, again,
ridiculous.
We'll 15, talk about that 20 more than Sheffield Wednesday is crazy.
Yep. Ben, Barnsley weren't out of the mix at this point either. They were definitely hoping to cause an upset, or maybe at this point dropped off and maybe they were hoping that they'd do a favour for us and knock Sheffield Wednesday out of the mix. But this was not a gimme match, and it was a really tense game for the first 40-odd minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I know they're a very sensitive bunch and I don't want to upset the Plymouth fans, but at this point, maybe the hardest game in League One for us was Barnsley away, because the way they play, and I love to watch it, I have to say, is proper up and at them, you know, nice, direct, wing-backs forward. You've got to defend well against Barnsley, else they are definitely going to score against you. And it's been a long, long winning streak. I think Mike Duff's done an excellent job.
You were at the Sheffield Wednesday game, weren't you?
Yeah, they were excellent, Dave. Swept them away. And I'm like, if you don't turn up against these guys, they're, you know... The problem was, we just had this building body of evidence of going away to the best teams in the league and winning. And as a football fan, Rich, you're never quite super confident. I don't know what it says about you as a person. If you are going, oh, we're definitely going to win. You know, you kind of
Seb.
Always...
That was Seb, yeah.
No. Well, I mean, they were right. So, you know, you're like, oh, this is a tough one. And... just, I think the moment of the season has to be the George Hurst goal. It was just a spectacular moment in the very same way. The parallels are incredible. I think Mike even tweeted about the number on the shirt of, in the promotion season, you've gone 1-0 up and immediately Marcus Stewart is tearing through on goal to make it 2-0 straight away. And just coming up to half time and you've got yourself a lead, you know, you just maybe you'd have been happy with 0-0 at half time. And just the way the goal transpired as well, that this goes loose, you're all hyper because you've just scored, and he starts to run and you're like, oh, here we go. And this whole away end goes up, and I don't know what you call that 1 second before the player hits the shot. Oh, the
pause before the...
Oh, and just the way, the completely audacious, ridiculous way he just larrups it into the corner is the best moment I've had watching Ipswich in years, when that ball hit the net. Dave, the realisation then of this is happening.
We've
just gone 2-0 up.
Well, it was almost a Wembley moment, wasn't it?
Where we needed to step up, we stepped up, and that goal was... And people are telling me on the podcast, oh, it's going to be done, Ben, the Exeter game before the... No, it's not. Come on, have you seen this season? It's going to the last game. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, hello.
And don't forget, that move for the goal starts with... They've got a penalty shout in our box, haven't they?
Marginal way.
A penalty shout for a possible handball, I think, against... Is it who actually... Davis, I think, who clears it. Right. And I think, again, the statement there, the team of the EFL, the League One team, has just been announced, and Anderson, centre-half.
He bullied him.
Hurst just runs all over him, doesn't he? Just absolutely
Anderson's a great centre-half, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Just sheer strength, persistence, and as you said, the finish is just absurd, isn't it? Brilliant.
But then, as Ben was saying there about defending, we defended our box superbly that night. You know, Wolfenden and Burgess, they just didn't allow much, if anything, to get past that near post when the crosses were coming
in. Haddon and Williams, Craig, constantly headed, and then the
and
long
headed,
throws go in.
And headed, yeah, they won all of their headers that day.
I think Burgess shouldn't be underestimated, the impact he had after coming back, you know, in that run. I thought he was just absolutely superb, wasn't he? And in some instances, maligned by some people, but I just thought he was fantastic.
Well, those two are sort consistent. Of a snapshot. They're a snapshot, really, aren't they, of the coaching that they receive? Because when they're put together, you've got Wolfenden and Burgess in terms of their ball playing capabilities. Yeah. You've got Wolfenden and Burgess in terms of their defending capabilities.
Yeah.
They've brought Burgess's ball playing capabilities up. They've brought Wolfenden's defending up. And they're now both of a level where you think, crikey, they're both decent, very decent defenders now. So it just goes to show that the coaching is going on, has managed to... What I perceive as their, you know, maybe their relative deficiencies, they've bettered
them. I think possibly there might well be another centre back coming in, but I wouldn't have any qualms going into next season with those two centre backs.
We'll come back to that one. I think we definitely need to debate that, don't we? Craig, if I'd offered you 5-0 after 32 minutes against Exeter, would you take it? Talk to us about the scenes of Barnsley, epic. You know, we had Dave and I weren't fortunate enough to be there, but bumper numbers on the live reaction, which went on for about an hour and a half or something like that. Talk to us about the bus parade before the game for Exeter.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a sunny day that day, wasn't it? If I remember,
they're all sunny, rightly.
Yes. Yeah, so you know, it was the day, and we've spoken about Charlton before, and I've said it before about my not so little boy coming along and watching matches, and he's 15 now and hasn't really had much to shout about in all the years of me dragging him along. And we're at that Charlton game together, and you think, Craig, 4-2 up. This is it. This is his Richard Chaplow moment. This is his Noel Hunt moment at Charlton. You know, this is your game, mate. You know, this is the one that you'll remember forever. Well, he will remember it forever, but not for the right reasons. But now everyone, all not only us, relatively old guys, but the youngsters have got Exeter at home now as being their memory, you know, whether they were there for the bus arrival amongst the thousands of people that were there with flares and flags and horns and everything. Yeah, to let the players know that, you know, thank you and we're with you for this. But for it to then build that momentum, and for that momentum to then carry on into the first 30 minutes of the match, you know, it was just the perfect day in lots and lots of respects, whether it be the weather, whether it be the arrival, whether it be the match, whether it be the subsequent celebrations, wherever you may have celebrated that evening, it was just the day. Ben was saying about, you know, the Barnsley and the Hurst goal being a memory that he's going to treasure for a long time, the one that he hasn't had for 15, 20 years. well, that day as a whole, I think, will hopefully live long in the memory of everyone that was there.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, Ben, this game to me typifies where this team is. This is utterly, I've used the word merciless, but ruthless, just efficiency to get the, leave no doubt, because Exeter, nothing to lose. We know League One teams come to Portman Road, low block, and throw caution to the wind with set pieces and counter-attacks, and in the past, you know, drop points to the likes of Lincoln, Cheltenham, etc. This was never going to be like this, but did you expect us to blow Exeter away within half an hour? It was just, feels like unprecedented watching Ipswich Town team to see this level of competence, confidence, and as I said, just ruthlessness.
It's just mental, wasn't it? But it's, why would we have expected anything else at that point? It's only the emotion of being a football fan. I think I said on the pod, I phoned my dad on the way into work that morning. What I always try and do, which is probably a terrible thing, is I visualise in my head how you'd win the game, but also how you would lose the game. What would that look like, us lose it? So I'd even kind of, you know, mentally prepared myself for that. But yeah, generally, if you're two goals up by half time, you're having a good day. Three goals up by half time is, you know, a once in a season occurrence, unless you're Man City or something. Five in the first 30 minutes. And we had Jamie Mackey, didn't we, on the Telegram thing. And he said, but Ben, the key thing you're not mentioning is Exeter. We've got nothing to play for here. So if Ipswich start well, it will get away from them. He absolutely nailed it, didn't it? And that's exactly what happened. If they'd been in a relegation scrap, a playoff scrap, anything like that, you know, they've got something to fight for. Long journey, like Craig said, the whole, and we saw this in the Sheffield Wednesday Peterborough playoff, where it's not 11 against 11, it's 150,000 against 11, and sometimes teams just buckle. And what a glorious way to do it, Rich.
It's like a greatest hits of this team, though, isn't it? Chaplin gets a brace, tick. Luongo gets a goal, a long busting run into the box, cross the keeper, scores. Great assist for Broadhead for Hurst's third, and then Broadhead gets in on the act as well. Burns, Dave, talk to us about, where's Burns? Because obviously we'll focus on the assist for Davis, we'll focus on the goals for Chaplin, we'll focus on the golden glove for Christian Walton. But first off of the season, where's Burns? Hadn't lived up to the elevated expectations that everyone had on him. But he turns up consistently in these big matches. I think the guys, Joe might have mentioned it in part one. Where's Burns? Unsung hero, perhaps, of this massively functional
team? Strangely, I think he was this season, perhaps, you know, because, you know, with the signings coming in January. And odd one, wasn't it? Because up till Christmas, he hadn't perhaps had his... You know, it wasn't perhaps consistently reaching the heights. I think we all said it. He wasn't really reaching the heights as he did last season. I mean, fantastic season before, player of the year, etc. I would say he was struggling, but it just wasn't, you know, just wasn't quite happening. And I think we said on the pod that, well, of course, he was so good the season before, you know, opposition and what, not wised up, perhaps they're doubling up on him, which in certain games they certainly were, you know, and he wasn't having that space. But again, you know, post-Christmas, again, with the run, again, just outstanding. And yeah, again, confidence being away with Wales again with Broadhead. Okay, didn't feature much, but did get some game time. And again, post that, for those last, what, 7, 8, 9, 10 games, along with everyone else, he's absolutely superb, wasn't he? And his assist level and again, goals and big, he's just a big game player, isn't he? Absolutely, yep. He's a big game player, you know, from the Plymouth at home, the Derby game at home.
Peterborough away.
He's absolute.
Rich, can I just quickly jump in? Craig and I had our big debate about upgrading a player who is fit for purpose or is not fit for purpose or whatever. Where I do agree with Craig is, how does these players coming in, these upgrades in January, affect other players? Do they maybe look at it and go, hang on a minute, this thing's going in this direction and I want to go with it? And there's just a bit of a sense with, you mentioned Burgess of Wolfenden. Ladapo, yeah. You know, do I want to get aboard the train and stay on it? And to Craig's point about, you know, that fairly merciless strategy of bombing players out, what does that do to other players? Does that set a culture of, look, if I'm not at it here, That picture on the wall next year, I ain't going to be in it.
Yeah. Just to finish this, I think we're going to come back and do a kind of an awards pod at some point. Maybe we'll do it live.
Am I nominated for any?
Sure. Interrupting awards. All seven of us are going to be up for that one.
I've held that for seven seasons.
I want it.
We're going to retire Dave's shirt. It's Dave's out of the running of that one. Just very quick. So we're going to come back and talk about individuals. Yeah, we could talk about, we mentioned Chaplin and Ladapo and Chaplin actually both shot per 90 and Edwards successful duels per 90. We talked about these kind of stat leader situations in previous pods. We're going to come back and do kind of maybe a bit of a kind of irreverent look at the season with some awards, and we'll maybe do that live. So keep your eyes peeled on our socials and all that kind of stuff for that. But very quickly for each of you, I just want to know where this season ranks. We'll skip past the Fleetwood game because Plymouth do what Plymouth do and they win the league. Out of it and need a miracle and a very slim moment where Port Vale take the lead, but Plymouth do what Plymouth do.
Yeah, this is your bugbear here, Rich. Just a quick one. Our crowd still hadn't quite twigged the butterfly effect of us singing about either winning the league or finishing top. There was a ripple that then headed down to Devon and the goal went in.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about most tempting fate chance of the season in our awards, shall we? Craig, very quickly, and I'll come to all of you on this one. Where does this season rank in respect of the success, the enjoyment, the kind of off-field factor as well? Because obviously it's a League One promotion. And in our history of the successes, this is pretty low down in comparison to winning the UEFA Cup, winning the FA Cup. But all of us have got our own Ipswich Town history. Where does it rank for you in terms of all of those kind of tangibles and intangibles?
Yeah, well, I think two things. You have to, as you say, you maybe temper it a little bit in terms of the level that we're playing at. However, conversely, let's compare it against what we've been sat through and sitting through for the previous umpteen years since we dropped down to the Championship, bar one or two seasons. From my perspective, I think it really, you can gauge it by how old you are. I think, you know, I'm of a certain age. I missed out, unfortunately, on the UEFA Cup win and started pretty much soon straight after that. So in terms of successful seasons, it's got to be in your top 10. But again, referencing, I'm more happy for the kids. You know, I say kids, you know, these guys who are in their 20s, they haven't experienced anything yet.
Kieran, certainly, yeah. Jordan saw us playing the Premier League, but Kieran.
Yeah, exactly that. So I'm just happy. And as you say, Rich, it's shown and it's permeated through the crowd and into the town. And you saw the scenes before and after Exeter. And hopefully we'll see those come August again as well. But I'm just more than happy for those guys, whatever, 20 plus and below, who've now got something that they can hang their hat on. That's what they're going to remember. Like I remember 91, 92, for example. They're of an age where, thank God for that, we've experienced something. We've had our day in the sunshine.
Too much in the sunshine, eh?
Some people too much in the sunshine. But, you know, they've got that now.
Yeah.
And they can experience it. And hopefully we've got no reason to think it's not going to be the start of something hopefully special.
I was going to say, Ben, similar question to you, but give me your sense of what it might mean for next season as well. Because in terms of the ownership group, that's the real quiz, isn't it? Getting out of League One is ticking the box. But in terms of their long-term strategy, it's what happens next. How does this season give you confidence for next?
Well, I feel I'm very unpopular in our Telegram group because I tend to think that it's my job to kind of temper a little bit the expectations. And I'm not saying that people are naive enough to think that 90... How many points did we get? 98?
96. 98. Should get the league table up, really, shouldn't it?
Not that 98 points will then translate to 75 or whatever in the playoffs in the championship. So I think it's very, very important to temper it. And there's lots and lots of different challenges in the championship that just aren't present in League One. And we're going to have to excel in different ways. And, you know, I've been very keen to say we were essentially the Man City of League One in terms of the recruitment, able to get the best players, pay the highest fees. That's just impossible against FFP and against teams being paid £45 million in their first year of after relegation for a parachute payment. It's just you just can't do it. You have to be clever. And again, I'm very unpopular in the Telegram group. It's all very well talking to me about Brentford and Brighton. Don't tell me, show me. You know, go and sign Neil Mopay for $2 million and sell him a season later for 25. Go and sign Saeed Benrahma. Go and sign, even when we were talking about Gus Hamer for Coventry, €1.5 million. It's gonna, it is a £15 million player after 3 years of development. Picked up from a Dutch team, PS Zoel or something. David will probably heard
Zwolle, yeah.
Yeah, not even a top end.
Zwolle.
Dutch team. So you've got to be very, very clever about it. It's very, very exciting. I'm very excited. I hope it all goes terribly, terribly well. Just to quickly answer the previous bit, if I can. I know I'm banging on. You're totally right, Rich. You don't have the right in life to tell anybody else what is meaningful to them. And I totally agree with Craig. A Liverpool fan doesn't get to tell a Stevenage fan that this season wasn't the greatest season in the history of football. Because to the Stevenage fan, it was. Because they got promoted out of absolutely nowhere. So, yes, it's League One. But we've said on the pod, Dave and I have privately, just give us one winning season, one bloody winning season. That permeates the fandom. From my time watching, I was kind of around in the Premier League later era, but not as engaged as I was under George Burley. So I don't think you get close to failing in the playoffs, failing in the playoffs, failing in the playoffs, and winning them Wembley. The way we did. That is very, very special to me and the characters. And we've been so lucky on the pod to be able to tell the people that provided us with that moment, thank you, which is just incredible. But this is the second. Absolutely brilliant. And I just reiterate my point. The context of every fan is unique, whether you support Real Madrid or Man United and you're winning every year, or whether you support Ipswich, and this is the best season in years, and I've loved it.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. Even for me, it's up there. You know, football's moved on. Yes, I was obviously old enough to have seen the Cup final and the UEFA Cup and everything else, and pretty much all the Robson era, as you know, growing up under that, and you know, obviously, you know, years post that. But I think for sheer entertainment and the football, the quality of football played and the entertainment, even again, and Craig quite rightly said, you have to temper at what level we're playing at, but you know, it's up there. It's up there for me. And I think, again, you fit on that. You know, it's just the feel good aspect around the club now. You know, the whole day around Exeter and the you know, the arrival of the team bus and things like that. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I think perhaps social media is obviously, you know, caught fire over that, which obviously we didn't have back then. But you know, even Rich, we take me and you pretty much every other Saturday we're in the pub post match, and I think you can even if you take that as a sort of level, just the, you know, as the games and the weeks went on, just how the atmosphere changed, even post match in the pub, for goodness sake. So yeah, as football, as entertainment football, for me, yeah, certainly is up there. And you know, as Ben said, you know, yeah, obviously for me, UEFA Cup, FA Cup are up there, and playoffs, etc. But yeah, and look, we're going into, you know, you're going into the Championship. You've got to be confident. We've got certainly going in there with momentum, and yeah, I'm sure we'll get onto that on a later show. But recruitment will be no doubt a key factor.
It will, yeah. Well,
and is you know, and also the question of, you know, Ben talks about, you know, side Ben, you know, Brentford, Benrahma, Mopay, etc. Arguably, we've got maybe one stroke two players that could fit into that category. Maybe not now, but certainly with another good season under the belt.
Well, we will come back and we will definitely recap the season with some kind of awards show. We'll do that, as we said, probably do that live. I think we're going to be coming back throughout the summer as well in terms of Championship recruitment, big announcements, shirts, fixtures, etc. But we won't be as routine as we have been throughout the season for obvious reasons. But you can still find part one, if you haven't watched that already, our archive of interviews. There's a playlist for that, including the ones with TWTD, the likes of George Burley, Jason Dzel, Chris Kiwomir, Simon Milton, and players around Matt Holland, obviously, from those successful eras of the past. Telegram is available to you as well. The chat is ramping up. There's transfer nonsense continues. Very much not
do,
for me.
Do you like the transfer stuff, Rich?
It's not muted yet. It's not muted yet.
Chrissy's going big on Will Keane here.
If you would have come and enjoyed that, then feel free. 2 weeks on us and then a subscription thereafter. Merch as well. BlueMondayITFC.co.uk.
How much everything. Can people irritate you, Rich, in a free trial over 2 weeks? I reckon 8 transfer rumours per day I would endorse people putting in.
Just remember that I have the moderator powers.
is it ethical to ban people during their 2 week free period?
Can you imagine?
No, it's their free speech right. They can link us with Victor Jokeres if they want.
But if you like me, there is other Ipswich Town chats available that aren't as tinpot. No.
Colby Bishop, now on the first tee at Purdis, apparently.
There you go.
I don't know.
There it is.
There you go. Someone set up a meter reading for him at a new house at Ipswich. So all the bits and pieces, BlueMondayICFC.co.uk. I'm going to come to the guys to say goodbye and sum up the season, because we're going to mark this as the last proper pod of the season. But I just want to say a few thank yous on behalf of all of us. Ed Lay and Rob at Zoom Management from Editors for the use of that song. And I think we've got to keep that going, haven't we, now? It's part of the setup. ITFC, Theo Benawer, Sarah Stafford, Casper Herrera, involved in the sponsorships and live events that we had as well. Hopefully a lot more of those to come. Our good mate Andy Warren, who has now jumped ship to work
tremendous.
At ITFC. Graham Mack, Connor Bennett as well, Radio Suffolk for all their support. James Rowe at TalkSport, Ben and Tom at Leveller, and the Friends of Blue Money, the guys who have got involved in the sponsorship for Lucy O'Brien and Abby Lafayette as well. Jim, Alex, Andrew, James, Mark, Helen, Paul Westlake, Andy Simon, Kristen Richards, Ed, FPL Tractor at ITFC Nostalgia, Matt and Chris, thank you for all your support. Your names are at the end of the show, but people often skip past that. So thank you on behalf of everyone at Blue Monday for your support. Thank you everyone for listening, who subscribed, who's got involved in the chat and on Telegram. And thank you guys for your time, your insights.
Well, let's interrupt you and let's add you on to the end of that, Rich, because people probably don't know in the background that, you know, I've moved a lot of times and had a child, and we've really kind of handed over the running of the podcast to yourself. And I think what people don't realise is that after we talk for an hour, you then spend another hour editing Dave's phone going off,
out the way.
All of that, and putting tweets out. So from all of us, I guess, and probably from all the listeners, for all the invisible Cole Skews stuff that you do that doesn't get noticed. Big thank you to you, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Yeah,
Ben, do you want to sign off and say thanks or to anyone, or just...
No, absolutely not. No, yeah. I think... no, thank you to the listeners. Dave and I say it from We get accused of a lot of stuff. We don't think we know more about football than anyone. We're just fans. We don't think we're bigger fans, smaller fans. We've got a platform. You've given us the platform. We're baffled that you listen, and we love that you listen. And it's absolutely amazing that people care about what we say. We're just continuing the conversation that you guys are all having on the terraces in the pub. And if it's value to one person, and it happens that it's value to a lot more people than that, so we would be having these conversations in the pub without the cameras on, if not. But we love that you're eavesdropping and listening in and giving us your views. So just thank you to everybody who's listened. Really
great stuff, Craig, the pop master himself. Any final words, Jerry? Well,
I now know why Ken Bruce limits it to 30 seconds for shout outs.
Why am I getting such stick today, dearie me?
Last show of the season.
It's just the same as everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone, for watching. What has obviously happened this year, this season, is the Telegram stuff, and it's created a little community in itself. You know, and there's been meetups, there's been chats in the pub. You know, we'll go and meet at away games and stuff like that. It's just nice to have just that little sub community, if you like, of like-minded fans who just can have a chat and disagree and not be horrible about it at the same sort of time. But just everyone, enjoy your summer. Enjoy buying the variety of promotion tat that's coming out from various channels. Fill your walls up, fill your boots with that, we'll hopefully have a few shows over the summer and come back in earnest in August.
David feels right at the end of the first celebratory podcast season of Blue Monday that you have the final word. So over to you, my friend.
Yeah, no, just really echo what the guys have said, and I think you can probably note the quality of the season by the amount of times I've uttered crap over the over the season, really. So no, just thanks to everybody, both in the Telegram group and all the guys that support and follow us, and obviously look out for mine and Craig's cricket podcast coming to you shortly.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.